In addition to taking care of one another inside the church, what if we developed a lifestyle of taking care of the most needy outside the walls of the church? How would that change the community and our city? Bob Moffitt, president and founder of Harvest Foundation in Phoenix, along with Pastor Julian Gibb, talk with pastors and leaders about how sacrificial love by those in the church to those in need outside the church has helped people see and embrace Jesus Christ. It's that demonstration of Jesus' greatest commandment that we'll hear more about today on The Kingdom and Its Stories.
Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are. My name is Julian Gibb from the Harvest Foundation, and today I'm blessed to have Eddie, superhero Eddie from Albania. And Eddie is from the Illyricum movement. And Eddie, it's a blessing to have you with us here today.
It's my joy and honor to be able to be here. Thank you.
Now, Eddie, first of all, a little bit of background on yourself. Tell us, you know, where you were raised and how you were raised.
Well, I was born in Albania and raised over there during the communism time. I was born in 1978 when Albania was on its best period of time in Albania, when I was born and grew up. So I was 13 years old when communism left because of the collapse of the economy that went very bad. And that was a time that I was for the first time hearing the gospel through the Jesus film, a documentary made out of the Gospel of Luke from Campus Crusade for Christ. And I was 13 years old, and that was exclusive news to me. Somebody dies and rose again, because I never heard that before during the communism time. So that was amazing to hear that message.
And so you were from the sort of Soviet, or the tales of the Soviet era, and what were you raised? I guess that there's no God, you know, all that religion stuff is silly, and just rely on humankind. Is that what you were raised on?
You know, it's very interesting, because Albania in 1967 was declared to be the first world officially atheistic state. So our government totally get rid of the God. They physically destroyed all the mosques and a few churches that were at the time, because Albania prior to communism was for 500 years under Islam. So we had a huge amount of time under Islam, actually double than the life of the U.S. You know, U.S. is 240 some, so it's double the time that we've been under Islam. And when communism came over in Albania, they physically destroyed actually all the religion things. And even what is unique is that even the word God was deleted from vocabularies during the communism time. So nothing at all, like a revolution, which was unique for all the Eastern European countries where communism was established. So I grew up with that mentality. I never heard anything about God. Either never heard the word God mentioning, because I know that this is kind of out of your imagination here, but you'd be in prison for the rest of your life if you even mentioned, like, oh my God. So that was something very, very, very unique that Albania had during that period of time. So that's how the situation where it was when I grew up during that period of time. So
what did you think of those crazy Christians at this time?
We never thought anything, because we didn't know that they existed, basically. So they took it, I mean, they changed the whole history part. They got rid of all God things, religious things. Yeah. So made the history like real atheistic history of the world. And that's how we grew up. So we never heard anything about the religion, about God, about Jesus, about Islam either, even though we come from a long period of time under Islam, as I mentioned to you. So when 991 came, and we were very exposed. And one more thing is that Albania was surrounded by electrical defense. Nobody could get out, nobody could get in. Very, very isolated country. And just to make one more very interesting fact is that first time I saw banana was in 1991. They would consider banana a capitalist fruit. So I don't know where they get that, but you know, we were very isolated. We were like a planet on its own. We didn't know how the real world was outside.
Wow. So the capitalist banana, the fruit of Satan himself. Wow. So Last question on that topic is just so it's pretty must have been what happened when the walls fell down? So suddenly you can't say the G-O-D word, and you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't eat bananas, and then suddenly the walls come down, and it's a whole new world. I have to ask one question. What was life like before? Was it because we're always like, oh, must have been. I mean, must have been awful. What were the good bits? Well, there must have been. Were there good bits before the wall fell
Well,
down?
it's re interesting part is that we didn't know how the world was, so we didn't know how what to compare with. So for us, that was the best. So that's how we grew up, and that was our mentality. I mean, government would be like the big daddy. They will decide about what school you will go, what university you will go, if you will go, what job you will take, how much you will own. And also, there were no private properties at all, so everything was owned by government. So basically, you were like a machine, but we didn't know that we were like that until the wall fell and we saw the reality in the world. So that was kind of the interesting part. So, I mean, when you don't know how the other things are, with what to compare. So for us, that was a reality. And when the wall went down, when Albania was exposed toward this new reality that existed for so long, but we didn't know that, we were kind of shocked, especially our parents' generation, which was very, very discouraged. And because they truly believed that system, they were grown up during that system. And when that system fall, they saw the new reality that the world was, and they felt very, very bad because they were lied a lifetime, and there was no time to go back and gain those years again. So they lose the trust. Actually, that's one of the consequences that is still on in Albania. Our parent generation is very hard to reach with the gospel because that attitude is believe, but don't believe too much because you can get disappointed, just like we did. So it's hard to believe wholehearted for that generation anything, not only God, but anything, because they were very disappointed when they were being lied a lifetime, you know.
Wow. So in Albania, are you finding that it's actually, in fact, the younger generations which are more open towards spiritual things?
It is true. The young generation is very open toward the spiritual things. I remember I was 13 years old, as I mentioned, when communism left, and I heard my friends in my neighborhood shouting, "There are some Americans coming to show a movie about God." And there were two weird things in that sentence: Americans and the movie about God. We have never seen any American before. And actually, by the way, they were very brave people that came to Albania without knowing, because there was no information what was going on in Albania outside of Albania. So they just came as the world went down. They just came and they showed, shared the gospel and showed this Jesus film, the documentary made out of the Gospel of Luke that Campus Crusade for Christ used. And that was very interesting because we've never, as I said, we've never seen any American, but we all day long heard bad things about Americans, like they are going to come and kill and all that thing. Now our curiosity was like, wow, how do they look like? And by the way, poor those Americans, because they were surrounded by multiple kids trying even to touch them to see if they were humans. But the second thing that was very interesting was this movie about God, and that I never had any idea. So I saw this movie and I was shocked that in the end this guy dies and rose again. And I got even more shocked when I heard those Americans saying that they believed that this was a true event that happened in history and that this man was God. Wow, that was kind of exclusive news to us. So I just went home and I talked with my family, my parents, and first time I hear from my grandmother was that we come from a Muslim background. I have no idea before what was that either. And wow, I mean, as you can imagine, when communism left, even Muslims started to come back to Albania because they wanted to bring back their influence, and have back, all the influence there and build mosques, starting to do a lot of things like that. And I thought to myself, I want to know God. and I find out that I come from a Muslim background, so it made more sense to me to go by myself and to follow God via Islam. So I started to attend a mosque by myself. For 2 years, I was practicing Islam. But what was interesting that I couldn't get rid of what I've seen in that movie that stayed with me. Even though I was practicing Islam, Christ's death and resurrection stayed with me.
Wow. And so you came from the atheist background, and then you watched the Jesus video with the Americans, and you came to a slow journey, or rather the Lord was pulling you on this journey towards him, and you have come to faith. And so, you know, obviously that changed your life completely, and I can say that because I know you. And so then tell me, what was the call that God placed on your life at that point?
You know, I wanted to know, you know, in 1993, I had a desire to know what was the difference, the main difference between Islam, Jesus in Islam, and Jesus in Christianity that I've heard 2 years ago. So I was more curious on that part. I started to be more, you know, to search for more information about that. I got a New Testament. I got some material, some books. I met with some people. It took some time, by God's grace, to open my eyes. And in the end of 1993, when I understood that God himself came on earth to save me, I couldn't resist that kind of love. So I became a Christian. And at the time, I started to attend a small church in my hometown. I was very much involved there. 1997, I went to college, and there I attended Campus Crusade for Christ. I was also very much involved, and I grew up those years a lot in my walk with the Lord. And that lasted until 2001, when I graduated, and the desire of my heart to make Christ known, especially among Muslim people that that came to me since when I came to know the Lord, became a reality. So I came on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ in Albania, and I got married. I found my wife also with Campus Crusade for Christ. We got married in 2004. We have two sons, and all these years we've been serving with Campus Crusade for Christ in our region, in Albania, Turkey, Kosovo, Macedonia, Bosnia, in all that areas among Muslim students. And this is great, because one of the things that we were experiencing is that we were seeing so much openness toward the Muslim students about the gospel. So they were very open for that. And we are the first generation of Christians, Julian, in Albania, because Christianity is very young there since 1991. Prior to that, as I mentioned, we've been for 500 years under Islam and then communism. So basically, we are the first generation of Christians. So what we were doing with Campus Crusade for Christ was great. We were seeing people come to know the Lord. But then we kind of reflected, like, where do they go when they finish university? Because there were not many churches. So that's how we started the church planting ministry in 2012. That was the desire to plant and establish churches among indigenous people group, especially Muslim people. And that's why we call that Illyricum movement, because it comes from Romans 15:19, and it's an ancient name for Albania. Illyricum, Paul says, that has been so far preaching the gospel from Jerusalem to Illyricum, which is present-day Albania. And that's why we called our organization Illyricum Movement, because we wanted to see the gospel come back the same way as it was during the first century. So we were very passionate to see churches being planted and established and raise leaders from inside of it.
And so you were saying, and I noticed, you know, you've been, I don't know if I should say the countries, I don't want to get you any trouble, but so you're going to the Islamic countries, and you're sharing the gospel, and you know, in I'm saying this with all respect, you know, that's a dangerous ground to be in, you know, going into, I mean, or am I wrong? I mean, just going into Islamic countries and talking about Jesus Christ as the Son of God, you know, I know that's something that obviously they believe in Jesus as a prophet, but very against Christ being divine in that sense. Even in the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, isn't there, like, forbid the God having a son, you know, is written around in the mosque and the temple. So you entering into these areas, one, is it dangerous? And two, how has the response been?
You know, I'll start with the second one. The response has been great. God is bringing many Muslims today in, you know, to face His word and to come to know Him. I truly believe that from my experience in all these 20 years now, that there are more Muslims to come in to know the Lord and to come to hear the gospel in our lifetime, in the last 30, 40 years, and probably has been even in some centuries, even combined together. So what is happening in the Muslim world, people are becoming very open and the gospel is being penetrated there. So the second, that is the answer in the second question. The first question is that, well, for us as Albanians, because we are known coming from a Muslim background, it's not a big trouble to enter that part of the world because they love Albania. They consider Albania like their little brother as a country. So we have a very great open doors in that part of the world, and it's very easy for us in some ways to make Christ known there. So we don't see that as a very big problem.
So many people coming to Christ. I mean, that's amazing, you know. And going to one of your recent newsletters, you know, I'm a little bit intimidated by you, Eddie. You know, so I'm looking here, church plant, teaching online English, helping Ukraine, church plant in Kosovo, helping, starting up a center for violent women, to help women who are struggling with violence, another church and another church. So, Eddie, how do you do all this?
Well, we've got a group of people that we are together. So it's not only me and my wife, but we are, I mean, basically, Julian, the idea is this: we go in an area that doesn't have a church. We start to make Christ known there in different ways. For example, during the summer, children don't have much to do. So what we do is that we offer, like similar to VBS here in US, we offer for 2 months, 5 days a week, 4 hours each day, like a VBS thing where we teach them guitar, piano, drama, art, crafting, English, German language. They love all these things. And every week we have a biblical theme and all these components will minister to that theme. And in the end of the week, the parents will come and see a show that their children have prepared. So in this way, we meet the parents for many weeks, for about 8 weeks. And in this way, we build relationships with them and share the gospel. So that's how we start a church plant usually. These are some of the tools that we use. But as I said, God is open. I mean, that area is very open with the gospel. And people will come to know the Lord. But the biggest trouble in Albania is raising leaders from within. Because we cannot, I mean, we don't have seminaries there that people can be trained in ministry and then they can be a pastors of churches. But we have to raise them from inside that group. So that's the biggest obstacle. But actually, that's the biggest joy also. Because from that group of believers that are coming to the Lord, we start to distinct who can be the future potential leaders of the church. And after distincting them and kind of investing in them for some years, teaching them, helping them, they will be ready in some point to be the leaders of that church. And usually it takes between 5 to 7 years for a church plant to be established and to be on their own. So these people now will become our co-workers. So every time we plant a church, there are new co-workers coming alongside us. So that's why I'm saying is, you know, there are a lot of people being involved there in all these efforts. And we thank the Lord for that.
Oh, man, because I'm looking here and, you know, there's array, there's sort of marriage counseling, there's programs for teens and youth. So is it fair to say that really you're looking into the communities that you're in and looking for the needs that you are seeing there and working to try and fill them? Don't let me put words into your mouth, but just looking at your website, is that your tactic? You know, we wish to plant a church within this area. We feel the Lord is calling us there. Let's set up there. And what are the needs of the people? Is that your plan, your tactic?
That is actually because, I mean, through some meeting of those needs and we build relationships with these people. And that's how the gospel is being spread. And as God uses that. So we usually use different kind of tools to approach to people.
So give me some stories, obviously not people's names or things, but how have you encountered people within your own home country or the Muslim people? Have there been opportunities where they've sort of said, Eddie, why are you doing this? Or, why are you helping me? Have there been any examples that you can give of that?
Yes, actually, there are many of examples. For example, what I can say is that when we planted Ecclesia Church, that we called one of them, we went into this neighborhood to get to know some of the people. And there was one little guy, my son's age, that he came and he wanted to become part of this classes like EBBS. And he called his parents and asked his parents to meet with us after he heard about this. And his parents came and met with us, and they said that they were Muslims. And we talked, but we built some relationships with them along the way. It took some months. And what was interesting is that when they have always asked us, like, why do you do that? I give them an example of, for example, imagine if you have the medication for a very bad sickness, and you are not kind of giving to the people, but you are hiding that from the people. Do you think that person will be kind of a good one? And they definitely say no. And then I say, well, we have in this book the greatest message that this earth has ever heard. God Himself came on earth to save us, and there is hell and there's paradise. And the decision that we make to come to know the Lord, that will kind of make that path where we will go. And that is very important, more important than having a better life, more important than being healthy, more important than anything that this life could be. So that's why we sold our lives to this message, because it's the greatest message that a person can ever receive in this earth. And that's how we explain to them. And by the way, for Muslims, Gospel of John is the way to chapter 1, because in Islam, one of the things is difficult is that Jesus being the Son of God. But if you give them the perspective of the Gospel of John that says that the Word in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and later on saying that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So this is a great way to make Christ known to them, because you just give them the perspective of the eternal Word of God that became flesh. So it's a very, very wonderful concept of a project of Muslims. And this couple, they were both math teachers in a high school. As they were hearing this message time after time, months after months, to know the Lord, they gave their hearts to. But after 3 more years, this husband, her husband, became the leader of that church. So
Wow.
can you imagine somebody that you meet that doesn't have any idea, in a period of about 3 4 years, will become now the leader of that church?
I
And so
mean,
that is one of the greatest things.
that's really encouraging, and also, something for me and perhaps for others to take into account is that, in my country and perhaps in the US, we want instantaneous results. It's kind of like, hey, here's the Gospel of John. Are you going to convert to Jesus or not? So it's kind of like, I want instant result, and so there is that thing that, it takes time, and of course God is in control of the journey. It's not down to Judy and praise God. God is in control, and it's his timing is perfect. But just that wonderful example of people on a sincere journey of coming to faith. But Eddie, so how can people be praying for you? I mean, what's your web address? Is it illyricum.org?
Yes, illyricum.org. And if you have trouble finding our name, go to Romans 15:19. You'll read it there, Illyricum. So illyricum.org. That's our website. Actually, we cannot post everything in the website for
Sure.
what we are doing, because it's a bit sensitive. But if people want to keep in touch with us, there is that can sign up for our letters and updates, so we can be in touch with them. How we can pray? Well, we are now in the midst of a very great project starting. It's called International Biblical Training Center, where we are having people, church leaders from the Muslim world, together with their families, coming to Albania for a period of a year, where they will stay there. They will be trained in ministry. They will be trained in a vocation. We'll try to teach them a vocation, and they will be trained in homeschooling. So,
well, this is wonderful. And so, Eddie, we've run out of time, sadly, but Illyricum.org, planting churches, reaching out with the gospel to Muslims. Eddie, thank you, and may the Lord bless you.
Thank you so much.
Jesus defines discipleship as come and follow me. Next Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Faith Talk 1360, we'll hear another testimonial from a leader demonstrating how they and the people of the church are sacrificially loving the needy and beginning to see real change in their communities. If you have a personal example of how you are being the hands and feet of Jesus with your neighbors, we'd love to hear from you. Enter your story at harvestfoundation.org. That's harvestfoundation.org on the Contact Us tab. You can also subscribe to the podcast on The Kingdom and Its Stories on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.